This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Accelerate your day with today's business headlines with Volvo Cars.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin with me, Tan Chung Han and Joyce Cohen. Time to look at the top business stories of the day. We begin with the story that keeps on giving, a 1MDB, still there, top headliner. You know, in lights, we have a story from the Wall Street Journal this morning.
Yeah, so the headline reads, former Goldman banker in plea talks over Malaysian 1MDB scandal. The person in question, Tim Leisner. Tim Leisner, not just a Goldman Sachs banker, but also the chairman for its Southeast Asian operations. So here's what the first paragraph of that Wall Street Journal story says, and I quote, former Goldman Sachs banker is in talks with U.S. prosecutors to potentially plead guilty to criminal charges stemming from basically 1MDB. So potentially plead guilty to criminal charges.
Well, Han, the Malaysian Insight also has a story on this, and they phrased it as Leisner agreed to cooperate with the U.S. authorities investigating the 1MDB.
Yeah, and just to recap, look, who is Tim Leisner? So again, not just the Southeast Asian chairman for Goldman, but he was very much, he had his hands all over that the bond sales that 1MDB did back in 2009, I believe.
And he also said to have forged a very close relationship with Joe Lo, who was seen as the mastermind behind the 1MDB scandal.
Well, a source told the Malaysian Insight that Tim Leisner reached out to Joe Lo and his lawyers, and they told Tim Leisner to cooperate with the U.S. investigators.
Yeah, so it looks like Leisner, not just a deal maker in terms of arranging bond sales for 1MDB, but also for the U.S. Prosecutors, you know, presumably the DOJ. So, what does this mean? Look, there are question marks here because if you look at the Malaysian Insight story, the final paragraph reads, it is not known if the U.S. authorities will share any information from Leisner with their Malaysian counterparts, particularly with the prosecution against Najib. So, in other words, you know, okay, fine. According to the Wall Street Journal, he potentially could plead guilty, but what information he yields, how valuable it is, especially in light of the investigation, those still remain as question marks.
I mean, one interesting fact is that Leisner was suspended from Goldman in early 2016 after it was discovered he had written an unauthorized letter to a Luxembourg bank vouching for Joe Lo. So, you know, and it makes you think about the kinds of practices that these individuals engage in. Sounds rather dodgy that he would do that. In fact, detrimental to his own interests. Why would he put himself in a position where he would be likely to be pulled up in order to help a friend out?
Answer? $600 million. Those were the fees that Goldman Sachs apparently got from this deal. And just a quick correction here, those bond sales were actually done in 2012. So two different bond sales in 2012, raising $3.5 billion. There was a third offering, also underwritten by Goldman, that raised another $3 billion in 2013.
I remember the timing of the bond offerings raised eyebrows. I think one of the bond offerings closed mere weeks before GE13. And coming back to that letter that Leisner wrote, the letter said that Goldman had done due diligence on Mr. Lo and found no issues.
Yeah. Well, okay. So to be fair, we've gotten some, Bloomberg reports a response from a Goldman spokesman saying that they continue to cooperate with ongoing regulatory investigations. A spokesman from the DOJ declined to comment. Spokesman for the U.S. Attorney's Office in Brooklyn also declined to comment. So we'll see how this story develops.
Speaking about the fees, Han, I remember Prime Minister Tun Mahathir did say last month that Malaysia would seek to recoup about 18 billion ringgit potentially lost through 1MDB, as well as the fees paid to Goldman.
Right. So the broader picture there is $4.5 billion in 1MDB linked funds. That's how much the DOJ seeks to recoup. And for Goldman Sachs in particular, it's $600 million.
Right. So
lunch money for you, Sharad.
Yeah. You know, what I understand, interestingly enough, is that Goldman Sachs has already kind of responded to this by saying that they feel that they deserved every penny of what was paid because of the nature of the bond sales. There was the question of the time frame and the difficulty and the nature of what was being sold, that this was not a vanilla deal. And I guess you'd don't charge so much for vanilla. This is a much more exotic fruit and flavor.
Durian.
Yeah, well, in some contexts, it stinks to high heaven. Yeah. In others, it's very flavorful.
Oh, well done there, Shira. Okay, but you know, in terms of trying to recoup some of these funds, right? I mean, look, you saw what happened with the Swiss deal. There are regulatory and even in that case, I think parliamentary hurdles that have to be jumped over. So it's not as easy as like, hey, we want our money back, and they just roll over and like, okay, right? It's not that simple.
So, it's not that simple, but it does suggest that at least what we're seeing now is a concerted effort. So
sure.
Real political will that wasn't there in the previous administration, mm-hmm. needless to say, because the previous administration was deeply complicit, allegedly, and so now we'll be seeing much more clarity, perhaps much more speed, an acceleration in the in the process. Right?
Well, to recoup the money, I think we have to prove ownership of the money. That's what Tun Mahathir said. And, the previous government at that time, he was saying that they didn't claim the money in order to avoid accusations of wrongdoing and claim that, you know, we know the money is ours, is from 1MDB. So it's the whole change in narrative as well.
Yeah, and just to give you a quick update, we got news out of Singapore, just coming from the Straits Times. Their Foreign Minister, Vivian Balakrishnan, saying that Singapore has been thoroughly investigating 1MDB-related offences committed in Singapore since 2015. So, yeah, you know, that gap between the will down south versus the will that was exhibited by the previous administration here in Malaysia.
Yeah, and still some more legs there in Singapore because there are individuals under investigation. There's talk that Jolo's sibling or siblings are there and they hold much of his wealth there. All that, I think, still remains to be investigated.
Yeah, and also another person in question would be Reza Aziz. This is the stepson to the former prime minister, because if you compare the deal that he struck with US regulators, whereby Red Granite Pictures, his film production company, settled for $60 million.
In fines, right?
Right.
And but they also gave over the rights to those films, didn't they?
Yeah. But I think more glaringly was that there didn't appear to be an admission of guilt. Where else, going by the wording that was used by the Wall Street Journal for Tim Leisner, Leisner, may plead guilty to criminal charges. So, yeah, again, developing story, we have to wait and see.
Okay, let's move on to talk about property. A lot of us, of course, you know, aspire in middle-class Malaysia to own property. The question is, what kind of properties can you buy? Now, the government apparently is going to be making it much easier for the building of more luxury property. So you have a penny or two to rub together. You could be in for, you know, a smorgasbord of luxury apartments on their way to be built. What do we have there? Housing and local government ministers, writer Kamruddin, says the government might lift that moratorium on the building of luxury properties valued more than R1 million.
Yeah, sure. Remember, the ban was implemented in November last year. This was following a Bank Negara report, I think in June 2017, that showed that there was a property glut. Mm-hmm. So now what they're saying is that, you know, Bank Negara has agreed to improvise its current housing lending guidelines to assist more Malaysians, especially first-time buyers, to, you know, to look at buying houses.
Yeah, so it looks like there are moves by Malaysian regulators both on the supply and demand side. So supply side, take off that freeze on the R1 million properties or above, right? But that is in contrast to what we're seeing with the oversupply. How many times have we used that word oversupply when describing the current state of the property sector? And it's not just us.
Segments of the property sector.
Yeah, well, Ben Negara is going more about the affordability part of it, right? So there's that side. On the other side, right, you look at the demand. There is demand, but it looks like Ben Negara may get a bit more lax on the lending guidelines, right? But when you consider Malaysia's household debt levels, 84%, close to 85% of GDP, that should be worrying to you as well. If you are freaking out about the R1 trillion national debt, that's 80% of GDP. Household debt, 84% of GDP. So is it really a good time to be getting slack on lending guidelines?
Yeah, good point. I mean, in this story, Malaysian Reserve, in quotes, they say Bank Negara has come up with a very interesting and doable scheme, which is currently being fine-tuned. No details yet, so not sure what is this doable scheme. But then again, I think a lot of banks, they're not lending because the borrowers are not able to finance their loans, right? You have to make sure they are able to service the loans. So if you work around that, then, you know, there'll be, I mean, there are concerns whether or not people can afford to service their loans.
Yeah, so again, a property sector, something to be watched. While you've got, I mean, obviously, commentary from the really free market guys, you know, like Ideas, who says, well, no government intervention at all. Let supply and demand work its magic in the markets. I mean, you've got industry players or industry bodies in the property sector, you know, calling for as much as well. But obviously, well, there's an imbalance there, not just in affordability, but also supply.
Well, it might make sense in the luxury segment, but does it make sense in the affordability segment, you know, especially when there's...
Affordable segment, you mean?
Yeah, the, you know, the affordable segment. So, and the question really is, you know, there's a public policy implications, right?
And where are these affordable homes built? Whether there's demand for that.
Yep, and risks to the economy.
Okay, so we're coming up to the top of the hour. We'll be back with the opening numbers in the stock market and more news and analysis. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Fuel your business drive with a Volvo S90 T8 twin engine. So cost efficient, it makes good business sense. Volvo, made by Sweden.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.